This is Matt Wells at UN News. Every day, 33,000 girls under the age of 18 are married, often against their will, and one in three women will face sexual violence. Ending these scourges is the aim of the 16 Days Against Violence campaign, led by the UN Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency, UNFPA, which ended on Tuesday, the 10th of December, Human Rights Day. Here's the agency's executive director, Dr. Natalia Kanem, speaking to UN News' Daniel Johnson in Geneva.
The 16 Days Against Violence campaign ends today on Human Rights Day, and it is really important to highlight the prevalence, how common violence against women and girls is. And it's also really important to act. During the decade of action on the Sustainable Development Goals, these 16 days are crucial.
So how widespread is gender-based violence?
It's shocking that gender-based violence is so prevalent. One in three women or girls in their lifetime affected. And in some of the places where the UN serves, like South Sudan, you might as well say one in one, because the prevalence is at 90%. And this is trauma. This is trauma that's not only physical, but as women have told me over and over, the wound that you don't see is the one that cuts the deepest.
I know that UNFPA, the Agency for Sexual and Reproductive Health, has also done some research into conflict zones, and one of those is Syria. And you spoke to some Syrian girls who said the last thing we expected to have to watch out for was sexual violence. We thought it would be bombs. So it isn't just in conflict zones, of course. So what's the action that UNFPA, the UN Agency for Sexual and Reproductive Health, is trying to do right now?
The action against sexual and gender-based violence that we need to see is, first of all, empowerment of women and girls to be able to say no during peacetime. This is a problem that's exacerbated in conflict, but it is there, and it is still stigmatized so that the victim is still shamed and blamed rather than being able to seek support immediately.
Shamed and blamed means being thrown out of school, not being able to keep a job because the employers don't understand that young mothers, often on their own, sometimes their families shun them as well.
The tragedy about sexual and gender-based violence is that we don't speak out, and so people are scared. Now, why should women and girls live their life in fear? Action against sexual and gender-based violence involves expressing, in no uncertain terms, as the Secretary General has done, zero tolerance. That also means opening the door so that people who have been affected can be treated and healed, but also so that they can seek the justice that they deserve, and so that everyone, men, boys, women, and girls, will be able to understand clearly that this is not normal. That's the whole point.
Tell me about the pledges that you're hoping to achieve by 2030 as part of the Sustainable Development Goals.
The three zeros of UNFPA speak to the demands that women have for the Sustainable Development Goals era. And first is to meet the unmet need for family planning. This means control over your body, control over your fertility, and it has wonderful knock-on effects for economies. However, the main point is human rights of women and girls. The second one is something that I'm very optimistic that we're going to achieve resoundingly, and that is to end unnecessary deaths during pregnancy and childbirth. But the third one is the toughest one, and that is ending sexual and gender-based violence. This is the whole spectrum from female genital mutilation. And the pledge from President Kenyatta in Nairobi when he opened the Nairobi summit last month to end female genital mutilation in Kenya reverberated throughout the country. Now,
in a good way.
Absolutely, because in the closing, a 13-year-old girl stood up and said, "I come from a slum community, and I am so happy to know that my president is going to protect me from being cut." We also have, sadly, a form of gender-based violence, which is the 33,000 girls under the age of 18 who will be married by midnight today. So again, understanding that there is no 14-year-old, there is no 16-year-old who is ready to become a parent, and also that many of these marriages are really not consensual, ergo, they're not marriages. There is coercion. This is a form of violence against girls that needs to come to an end.
Just to pick you up on a few of those points that you raised, you mentioned that death among girls in childbirth is the second leading cause of death among 15 to 18 year olds around the world, I think.
It's the leading cause of death among adolescent girls.
I stand corrected, so we can see immediately the problem. And regionally speaking, where are the areas, the countries and the continents where the problem is highest?
Well, the idea of teenage pregnancy disguises sometimes the coercion that can be involved in terms of girls who become pregnant very young. Right now, Latin America and the Caribbean have to face up to having the second highest adolescent pregnancy rate in the world. This is where I hail from, by the way. And Africa has the highest rate. I will also rush to say that with migration patterns, we're seeing that certain types of marriages, certain types of pregnancies are occurring all over the world. So every region has this issue, but those are the ones that lead at the moment.
Now, coming back to the fact that today is the 10th of December, Human Rights Day, I don't know if you saw Michelle Bachelet's, the High Commissioner of Human Rights, message that was released late yesterday. She asked a question. She asked whether world leaders were as engaged in the opening statement, the opening declaration of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights on the 10th of December, 1948, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, and they should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. I mean, what is the situation now on the ground for girls? Are there still more under 15-year-olds who are getting pregnant than before? Or is it a more optimistic picture, or is it a bit more nuanced?
I have declared my trust in young people to change the picture that we have today. We have a generation of young people that's bigger numerically than ever before, 1.8 billion strong. And it's the mission of UNFPA and the Commission for Human Rights and all of us to empower these young people to take their place so that peace, dignity, equality, all of these elements of the larger freedom that the United Nations Charter speaks of come to fruition. Now, most young people in the world live in developing countries today. And education is so fundamental. We also have to understand that very often the opinions of young people are completely excluded by those who take decisions. So equipping young people to be able to realize their full potential means preparing them not just academically, but also encouraging them to use their voice and their power. How proud are we of the climate activists who are making it very clear that they are willing to act? During the decade of action on the Sustainable Development Goals, we're working with young people so they act in concert, so they act based on data and evidence, and so that they understand that they're part of a stakeholder community and that their opinions should be listened to.
You're smiling, but am I seeing optimism or are you seeing a paradigm shift? Are you seeing that member states are more engaged in this than before?
I am completely optimistic and I'm heartened by the outpouring of interest in the Nairobi summit, for example, where we had over 160 member states participate, and we've already had over 1,000 commitments that speak to these fundamental freedoms. I'm also extremely encouraged that the obstacles that face young people in getting an education, such as the ability to access transport and to understand that education is a right, in addition, working on jobs, working on access to information, including information about sexual and reproductive health, including truthful information that is so protective for girls, not just on the spectrum of health only, but that is part of it, but also as part of their rights. I see that we as a world community can address issues like child marriage, like FGM, and certainly like comprehensive sexuality education, which gives life-saving information to young people at a time when they need this.
Have you seen any technological benefits of things like the internet, the fourth digital revolution? Has that helped your work?
We see a dramatic upside. Coming now from Belarus, where I went to visit offices of Flow, which is the biggest health app in the world at the moment. They have over 30 million monthly subscribers. It happens to be a women's health app, and it started with menstruation. UNFPA, working with this company, has been providing content on a whole range of cycle of life issues mainly for women, up from menstruation all the way to menopause, but also speaking out about violence and what to do if you're affected, what to do if you've been raped, and how to get help, but also how to get allies. So I'm very optimistic about the digital technology, while at the same time, of course, the abuse of women and the use of the internet to shame women is something that the UN has allied with women politicians and with others in particular who have been victimized. Any technology, I mean, you know, if you drink enough water, I suppose it can kill you. We are looking for solutions, and that solution and action orientation, I think, is really going to be of great benefit to these young people who want a future that has a dignified potential.